like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Mark Reinfeld, the award-winning vegan chef and author of numerous books, including the 30-Minute Vegan series, and most recently, Healing the Vegan Way, plant-based eating for optimal health and wellness. The new book is divided into two main sections. In the first, Reinfeld, who holds a master's degree in holistic nutrition, addresses how many of today's health problems, including diabetes, heart disease, and obesity, can be traced to the processed food many of us eat, the standard American diet, and so on. This section is laced with essays and testimonials from cardiologists and other doctors, dietitians, and various other experts. In the enormous second section of Healing the Vegan Way, Reinfeld delivers advice on setting up a kitchen, meal plans, and some 200 recipes, most presented as templates with multiple variations that could potentially yield several hundred dishes. I'll discuss the medical and nutritional issues in the book, some of those 200 recipes, a few details important and illuminating to those who currently keep their distance from vegan food, and more when I speak with Mark Reinfeld in just a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll speak briefly with Claire Ray from Friends of Strays about their forthcoming big fundraising event of the year, as well as an ongoing pet food pantry program I think is important to highlight. It provides pet food to low-income families and those who might currently be hard-pressed to afford their pets fed. Lastly, I want to mention that we're less than a month away from WMNF's Fall Fun Drive, which starts on October 1st. Inevitably, I'll have a monstrous fundraising goal, so I hope you'll consider making an early donation to the Talking Animals tip jar, which you can find on WMNF.org. Just find Talking Animals in the schedule. Click on that page, and right above that, you'll find the tip jar for Talking Animals. Also, you can help me with some pre-pledges. For instance, I can offer a fabulous pair of tickets to see Steve Martin and Martin Short with the Steep Canyon Rangers at Ruth Eckerd Hall, February 11th, for a $200 pledge. If you're interested or would like to otherwise make an early pledge in support of Talking Animals and me and WMNF, please email me, Duncan@WMNF.org. Right now, though, let's get to Mark Reinfeld and his new book, Healing the Vegan Way, with the reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@WMNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Mark Reinfeld back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Duncan. Good morning. Thank you for having me on your show again.
Yeah, thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. Boy, you've written a lot of cookbooks, and while Healing the Vegan Way functions as a lot more than just a cookbook, and we'll, of course, explore all that in a moment, it is yet another Mark Reinfeld book. How is it that you are so prolific?
Well, I feel it's my calling, Duncan, just like you're prolific on your shows with the content you provide, I think, when you tune into your calling, it flows naturally.
Yeah, but still, that's a lot of writing. And yeah, I was kind of thinking the other day when I was looking up all the books you've written, and I guess early on maybe co-written, but still, I think it's James Patterson, one of those guys that has like some sort of people on staff that help write some of the stuff or prepare some of the stuff, and then he takes it and turns it into whatever best-selling book it becomes. But I gather there's probably not quite that machinery in place. You're just managing to turn these things out regularly.
Yeah, well, maybe for my next book, I'll take up that idea.
Okay. All right. So when assembling this book, the first portion of the book, as I noted in the introduction, you addressed how today's health problems, diabetes, heart disease, obesity, others, are really tied to a lot of the kind of foods many of us eat. And it's also laced with essays and testimonials from those cardiologists and other, nutritious, various medical professionals. So what was your guiding principle in assembling the first portion of the book?
Well, just to frame it, thanks for asking. I like looking at this as like the reason why people include more plant-based foods in their diet or go vegan is fits into one of three categories, which I liken to three doors going into the same room. One is the health or medical door, one is the environmental or sustainability door, and one is the ethical or animal rights door. They all lead into the same room, and once you're in the room, you could learn about the other reasons and embrace them as your own. And so for me, this is really focusing just on that first door, the health and medical door. And just the evidence continues to mount that these conditions that you mentioned are becoming to be seen as food related. And so it really is a simple fix in a lot of cases to prevent these conditions just by changing our food choices. So I wanted to highlight like the biggies in the health field.
Yeah. And so really a part of that, of course, is that you're pointing out what the results are of the way people do eat the standard American diet and variations thereof, but also how you and others that contribute to that first portion are really kind of articulating how to combat those issues by those kinds of changes to your diet.
Right. And if there's so many levels to it. Like on one level, there's like the human suffering level. No one wants to see their loved ones suffer or suffer themselves. And then there's a social cost involved as well. So what many people consider the healthcare crisis, I think, is really just a poor selection of food choices resulting in a lot of these conditions that then we're forced to treat with, you know, expensive medical care. It's really a profound, profound issue.
And some of these points, I think it's safe to say, and you would probably quickly agree, are found in books by others, most of which actually you refer to at one point or another in your book. So books and or movies, so books by Campbell, by Esselstyn, by Ornish, Forks Over Knives, Veducated, and so on. So what distinguishes your book from those, or were you really just sort of intending to kind of underline the concepts that those other works had presented?
Well, I like creating a concise position for the movement or this way of eating. And so I asked some of the leaders in the field to like basically give me their best shot as far as like a concise statement of their position on why it's important for us to eat in this way. And so I feel like I assembled a great team of experts, and then I pulled from my 20 plus years of experience in the culinary world to back that up with recipe selections and highlighting ingredients that we can include in our diet that will help us optimize our health.
Before we get into more details about the second portion of the book, the food, the recipes, and some, like I say, some 200 recipes, but you make a point of establishing that those recipes do come with sort of templates. So there's all kinds of variations that you provide from that each basic recipe. So really there's, I guess, hundreds, depending on how many variations you did of a given recipe. But before we get in all that, what I think, one of the things that I think is hopefully good or helpful about this show is it's not strictly, at least, a vegan-oriented show. So I think there are people who listen who aren't necessarily vegan but may or may not be making some changes or have made some changes in their diet and living over the years. So I want to tell you just a quick story just because it refers to kind of right here, and then I'll have you respond in one way or another. But so like was 2 or 3 years ago, the radio station was having one of its fun drives, which another one starts, as I mentioned, on October 1st. But and the place here when those are going on is buzzing with activity, particularly in the phone room. So I just have this vivid sort of memory of someone brought in a plate of vegan cookies, and of course said they were vegan cookies, and they looked good, and they were good, but at least a couple people that were in the room practically left skid marks running away from the vegan cookies merely because, at least I presume, of the vegan label. So
right.
I'm guessing there may be folks listening right now who feel much the same, who just like inherently would say, if you're saying it's vegan, I'm not interested. So I think one cool opportunity we have here today is for you to sort of to speak to those folks sort of by way of outreach. Like, what are they missing? What should they try, if at least remotely inclined to try something? In fact, maybe what are two or three dishes from Healing the Vegan Way that perhaps they should try first, that if they come even with a semi-open mind, that they might find, wow, okay, I don't know why I sort of had this attitude and why I was sprinting away when there's some stuff here I really like.
Right. I think that's a great great point, and I think having been involved in this movement for decades, I've seen a big shift in that regard. 20 years ago, if you said vegan, there'd be like a tumbleweed would enter the room, you know, and you'd be the only one standing. And now I think, you know, it's still a trigger word for people a lot of times because it's associated with maybe some hardcore animal rights people or information, and or maybe they've had an experience of food that was very bland and it was labeled as vegan. So I encourage people to say, to approach it with an open mind, and especially with the health aspects, there really is, it's going to me, in the same way that we look at the cigarette ads in the past as doctors recommending cigarettes, we will be looking at like the heavy consumption of animal products in the same light. I personally believe once this medical information gets out to more and more people. So with your health as a motivating factor, I encourage people to keep somewhat of an open mind. And actually, a lot of food that people are eating is vegan by nature. So if you've had salsa and guacamole at a Mexican place, it's been vegan. And there's a lot of other examples of that, like foods that are just naturally vegan that people enjoy. So, you know, there's over 200 recipes in the book, like you mentioned. So there's like the desserts in particular, there's like chocolate pudding in there, or an apple crumble, things that people won't even know that they're missing the animal product.
And I guess another part of this too is that part of the reason I brought up that example of what happened in the phone room here is that I think for a lot of people that there is that automatic association. If it's vegan, then it just couldn't possibly be delicious. And and frankly, there might have been a time where that was more likely to be true. But I think one of the things we even talked about, I think the last time that we spoke here, was just all the advances that have been made in all kinds of ways, whether vegan cheese or other things, as well as people like yourself that are constantly innovating dishes. But just think the idea is to say, well, okay, that maybe that was then, and we sort of understand why you were steering clear. But look, right. Look at this big, you know, sprawling book that that Mark has just put out with all these recipes and variations of recipes. And so let's, because in fact, there are a number of recipes that I'd like to try that are in here, including, I'm just going to name three, the Magnificent Mushroom Burger, the Wasabi Garlic Twice Baked Potatoes, which sounds incredibly good, and the Avocado Mousse Stuffed Tomatoes. So I just picked those three kind of randomly. A lot of tons more, of course, grabbed me. But would you like to say anything about any or all of those three, just as a jumping off point?
Sure. Well, one guiding principle that I have in the recipes is simplicity. So I like to have a lot of flavor in the recipes and keep in the number of ingredients in mind. Some recipes have more than others. The ones you mentioned are pretty, like their ingredient list is relatively short.
Mm-hmm.
And then each one of them, like, serves a different purpose. So the mousse is something you could just whip up. It's kind of like a creamy guacamole. So if you like guacamole, that would be something you can use. The baked potatoes, a lot of people like baked potatoes, so you can enhance the flavor by mixing it with some coconut milk and wasabi powder. If you've been to a Japanese restaurant, you've probably had some wasabi. And then with the burgers, that's one recipe where I provide these templates. And so with the template recipe, and I think I mentioned in my last show with you that I travel internationally teaching workshops and immersions and chef trainings. And this idea of a template recipe really resonates with people. And it's a way of breaking down a recipe so that you look at it in general terms and then break it down into its component part. And by replacing each component, you create a new dish. So I give a template for a veggie burger. So there's a grain component that you can use rice or millet or other grains. There's a bean component. You could add black beans, pinto beans, kidney beans, then a seasoning component, so you could take it in different ethnic directions, and a veggie component, so you could create different variations that way. And really, there's just really thousands of recipes in the book. I think it was like 94,732 recipes at last count. I think I might have lost count after 84,000. There's a lot of recipe variations in the book.
I think once you get into the 80,000s, it is kind of hard to keep track, especially if you're just working with your fingers or whatever. But so this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Mark Reinfeld, the award-winning chef and author of numerous books, most recently Healing the Vegan Way, Plant-Based Eating eating for optimal health and wellness. I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So we've already got you emails in and we've got some callers. Let's get some others involved in the conversation here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Mark Reinfeld.
Yes. Thank you, as always, for having such great authors on, and thank you, Mark, for your body of work. I have one very brief testimonial about veganism and then a couple of questions for you. My testimonial is I was vegetarian, and also I worked out a lot, and despite that, I was 50 pounds overweight, as many people who consume dairy are, and I finally decided that through all three portals, the ethical portal because of what I saw from animal cruelty in the food industries, the environmental portal, and the health portal, I'd go vegan. I went vegan, and in 7 months, I'd cut my food bill, and I'd lost all the pounds. I feel better than I've ever felt. Veganism is an anti-aging option. Here's my question. In health, there's a big component of mental and emotional health and spiritual health. And when I went vegan, I felt a moral boost from the fact that I was no longer harming animals. And I'd like to ask if you see a connection between veganism and feeling better about yourself because of your choices, and that improves your physical health as well. Number two, do you have an opinion about raw veganism?
Okay, thank you. I think he's going to have plenty to say on both. Thank you for your call.
Yes, great, great questions, and thank you for sharing your testimonial. I also do have in the book, like one woman who was a student of mine, she lost 160 pounds on a vegan diet. Her testimonial's in there, and I have a firefighter who reversed diabetes, and there's a lot of healing stories in the book as well, so thank you for sharing that. And for me, personally, the doorway that I went through was through connecting with animals, so I naturally felt that I was living in a more harmonious relationship with the world by making that choice. And in the book, I do mention that, like, for me, what we eat is crucial, but also our relationship to food is very important. So I think some people could eat very healthy, but if they're always obsessing about food and getting really uptight about it, that's not going to serve them. So I think it is all interconnected. And then as far as the raw food, I do believe that we need to have some percentage of our food raw, just because of there's a lot of heat sensitive nutrients in food. So what that percentage is, I think, varies person to person. In the book, I focused on raw foods my whole culinary career as a portion of what I do in my trainings and the books as well. So I have a lot of raw recipes in the book, and I encourage people to find what that percentage is for them. But I definitely believe in that.
Great. Okay. Well, again, caller, thank you for your comments and questions. And Mark, thanks for your responses. Let me read at least one or two of these emails. One says, "Hi, Duncan. Isn't Bill Clinton a vegan now, and hasn't he lost a lot of weight? I never thought he'd become a vegan." And it goes on to say, "Also, I think that the presence of PETA's undercover videos that shows how awful factory farms really are is helping steer people to veganism." So I guess let's start with the Bill Clinton thing. I mean, I think a lot of people at one point thought Bill Clinton was a vegan, and I think that's less the case now, but you can address this whatever way you'd like, Mark.
Yeah, it brings up a bigger question. Like, to me, it is important to see a lot of athletes and celebrities embracing the lifestyle, like more of the trendsetters. So they're 20 years ago, if you said a former president of the U.S. would be even saying the word vegan, you wouldn't have seen that. So I believe he did go plant-based or close to fully vegan at one point. Now I think he's not on board fully right now, but I did see something recently where he attributed his time of going vegan as something that saved his life. So if for him it was the heart condition, and that's one of the clear areas where there's a mounting body of evidence that, like, many forms of heart disease can be prevented and reversed on a whole foods plant-based diet.
Yeah.
And for the PETA videos, I do feel they serve a purpose. And I like to say, like, Einstein had a quote about expanding our circle of compassion. And so most people have compassion for their family and their pets and their dogs and cats and their neighborhood or their state or their country. And so part of this for me is like seeing how far we could expand that circle of compassion. And when you include farm animals in that circle, and then those undercover videos come up showing animals just being abused, then I think it triggers that response in people.
And along those lines, and along the lines of the three categories or gateways that you outlined earlier in the show, one of our emailers says here, Mark's cooking demo at Tampa Bay Veg Fest last year was awesome, and so were his books. Not only is going vegan good for people, but not eating animals saves our environment and animal lives. Thank you, Mark and Duncan. So thank you for your nice email.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's a concise. To me, it's a win-win on every level. Like, if you can, I see my role as showing people how easy it is to have the food taste good, and I like to refer to it as a type of activism, because we could learn as much as we can about the importance of why we should include more plants in our diet, but if the food doesn't taste good, it's really not going to go very far, like you mentioned earlier, Duncan, you know, in the past. So when you could have the food taste amazing, it's good for our health, it's less of an impact on the environment, and it avoids the cruelty that's involved in a lot of the animal agriculture now, I think it's just a win on every level.
Yeah. Well, one thing, too, let's underscore that, again, in the first portion of the book, where you're writing and various people that you've asked to contribute, and we're sort of, again, underlining kind of things that books and movies that others might be aware of. But I just think it's just if you just simply state that certain conditions, heart disease, diabetes, certainly, some would say certain kinds of cancers can be helped, and in many cases, those conditions can be reversed. I mean, it's almost like magic, but I mean, it's magic where your health and life could be at stake.
Yeah.
That significant of an impact can happen with your body by making those kinds of shifts in your diet. So with that in mind, let's talk about some more recipes in the book. And I mentioned three just random ones that jumped out at me, but what are some recipes in the new book where when you were creating them, you just got really inspired and excited and just thought, wow, bravo, Reinfeld, you've done it again.
Well, that's a great question. So for me, in recipe development, you get this response in yourself, like you said, when you make something that tastes really good. So I would say there's, you know, when I do the book, I strive for that to occur in pretty much every recipe. Like, I want to make sure that people get that experience of it. I would say just something that comes to mind, if there's a recipe for a creamy asparagus and soup with corn that came out really good in the veggie realm, there's like a roasted Brussels sprout dish that pops. There's the apple, the raw apple crumble for dessert. Each section you get that experience with a lot of the recipes. A great question.
Okay. Kind of reminds me that when you're asked about your favorite dish or your go-to meal, and I think I asked this when we last spoke, I think you typically answer monk bowl.
Right.
So
is a monk bowl recipe.
So let's remind folks what a monk bowl is and go from there, just since that's kind of your basic sort of go-to thing personally.
Yeah, this is like pretty much 20 minutes or less of my go-to meal that provides a lot of variety. And using the template recipe, there's at least, 4,873 or 4 variations of it. We'll see if your producer could count them in the time that I talk about it.
Okay. I doubt it. I'm the producer, and I can't count that. I don't think and do this. That's too much multitasking for me. Sorry.
Okay. Well, it's the monk bowl is basically a grain, a green, and a protein. And so using that template format, you rotate through different grains. So I like using quinoa, which is actually a seed, or different kinds of rice or a rice pasta, sometimes millet or buckwheat. So you rotate through the grains. The greens is any selection of vegetables of your choosing that you like, with an emphasis on including as many colorful veggies as possible, especially the greens. And those veggies can be raw, roasted, steamed, grilled, lightly sauteed, or a mixture. And then for the protein, I rotate through tempeh, which is a cultured soy product, tofu, or any of the legumes. And then for me, I could boil water, steam some veggies, cut up a piece of tempeh, put it in the toaster oven with a little tamari and maybe coconut oil, and then a pot of quinoa, and then really within 20 minutes, that's all finished. I top it with nutritional yeast, which gives you the B vitamins and some extra protein, and then maybe a little hemp or flax oil for the omegas, and that's pretty much my go-to meal.
Yeah. And again, 20 minutes and boom, you're sitting down eating.
Yeah, and then you could, if you want to go further, you could add different either prepared or store-bought sauce. So it could be a barbecue bowl, a Mexican bowl, a teriyaki bowl, a Thai peanut bowl, depending on the type of sauce you add.
If you think about it, so many different kinds of restaurants now offer bowls that didn't used to. So I thought, wow, Mark was once again ahead of the curve there with his monk bowls.
Yeah, my business partner, Bo Rinaldi, actually, he was talking about bowls in like the early 2000s. Now there's places that are just about the bowls.
That's right. All right, so again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Mark Reinfeld, the award-winning chef and author of numerous books, most recently Healing the Vegan Way, Plant-Based Eating for Optimal Health and Wellness. If you'd like to ask Mark a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. Let's take another one or two of our emails. One says, Christy Brinkley has been vegan since she was 13 years old, and she's, and I can't read the rest for FCC reasons, but certainly talking about her appearance being, I guess, quite good and striking. So I guess I didn't know about Christy Brinkley being a vegan since she was 13.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. I tend not to put too much focus on the celebrities adopting a vegan. I mean, there are some who have been vegan and are really in the movement for a long time, and others, I think it's, you have to wait and see. It's great even when people embrace it even for a short time, because it shows that it's something that's not just for the granola-eating hippies like it used to be.
Yeah.
Nothing against granola-eating hippies.
Right. We like them too. But the fact is, you said that about the not really emphasizing celebrities, and again, there is kind of some transient movement with that. This just popped into my head. I can't, and unfortunately, as a result, I can't think of the name of the restaurant, but there's a restaurant, fairly notable restaurant out, I think it was in LA, Hollywood area, whatever, that had become quite successful vegan place, and then the owners announced or somehow said that, so you know who I'm referring to. I just can't think of the restaurant, but I just, if you have any comments on that, I mean, that's kind of an interesting phenomenon in a few ways.
Yeah, it's generally, I try to keep the vegan police out of my life as much as possible. Like, I think everyone's at where they're at in their journey, and so, like, in the classes and trainings I do, most people aren't vegan. I refer to them as the veg curious.
Okay.
Like, they just heard about the benefits and they want to try it out. So it's a tricky thing if you promote yourself as vegan and your whole reputation is built on vegan, and then you go back on it, then I think that creates a sense of distrust.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if right from the beginning, if it was just like Burger King has a vegan option, and, you know, you're not going to say, well, you're not going to look at them as like going, like that they were promoting themselves as vegan, and then they're not.
Right, so
it's
definitely
a complex
issue. It is complex, and especially because I think the reaction to this place and this people, because as I understand it, for what it's worth, the restaurant has maintained the same menu, so it is still vegan. It's just that they themselves, so it's really, you know, becomes very interesting. But anyway, just popped into my head. So a couple other things here, Mark. Now, you've been in Florida, a Florida guy, for a few years now on the heels, there was a gap in between, but on the heels of living in Kauai for a while and having a noted award-winning restaurant there. Is there something about tropical climates that appealed to you or inspire you in terms of your work and your cooking and your creation and just all the various things that you do?
That's it. Well, the tropics have held an appeal. I think I might have mentioned I was in Colorado in 2002 in February, and I went to Hawaii for a 2-week vacation and stayed for 8 years.
So
the tropics definitely had an appeal, and just the abundance of the fruit, the tropical fruit, and the being able to swim year round. There's a lot of pluses to the tropics.
And I think when we spoke before, you had at that point just launched the Vegan Fusion Culinary Academy.
Right.
So for those who may not have heard that conversation or for some reason didn't find it scintillating enough to recall it now, what exactly is the Vegan Fusion Culinary Academy? And where specifically is it?
Well, right now it's the Traveling Academy, which is what I've been doing the last several years. So I travel internationally and I offer workshops and trainings. I do 10-day trainings, 5-day trainings, weekend workshops, and teacher trainings where I show people how to conduct cooking classes in their area. And I was starting to offer more classes here in Miami under that branch. And actually, I think since we spoke, I had a child, so that that created that shifts the plans a little bit.
Yeah, well, congratulations. Right, yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
And because I remember we talked about, and again, maybe this has sort of been dialed back or temporarily, but because we talked about that one of the key elements of that was training for doctors, nurses, and medical students. Because I remember we did talk very much about how over the years, different doctors and medical professionals have talked to me about how when they're in med school, they would have maybe one class on nutrition or not even that. And so they would get all the way through med school. I think you part of what you were aiming to do was supplement that and provide that for doctors who wanted it and realized they really should have had it at some point.
Yes, I have conducted a CME continuing medical education credits courses, and I've had several doctors taking my classes as well. And it actually ties back to what you were talking about earlier. I wanted to comment, like, the magical quality of all this, when actually Hippocrates, as you know, like the father of modern medicine, he said food should be our medicine. So it's like we've deviated from that. But now I think we're getting back to that more and more, where people are coming on board with that realization.
In a way, there's almost kind of a broad circle here, because you're helping some of those folks at least get up to speed. And meanwhile, in your book, you've got various cardiologists and doctors, nutritionists and others with essays and testimonials in the book. So it's kind of providing a complete picture, and you're helping some of those other folks, their counterparts, maybe get a more complete picture.
Yes. And these people are really pioneers, because they're going against a very strong institution. Like Joel Kahn is one of the contributors, the cardiologist, is on a campaign to reform how the food in hospital is served. Like, you see people coming out of heart surgery and they're given an egg McMuffin and bacon.
Yeah.
You know, obviously there's a missing link when our hospitals serve the same food as the bus station does.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I recall in his thing, he kind of noted that, without tooting his own horn, that he was probably kind of a hotshot cardiologist and he could still just do heart surgery for a long time and make a fabulous living. But his concern was really, how about having less heart surgery to do? So yeah, again, that's probably running counter to some of his colleagues, others in his field. But speaking of that, let me ask one or two other questions. We're just sort of nearing the end of our time here, Mark. But
sure.
One of our emailers wrote in and says, do you think blood type of a person helps or hinders a plant-based diet?
That's another one of the theories out there. And I do attribute my positive attitude to my blood type, which is B positive.
Okay.
No offense to the B negatives in the audience.
Okay.
But I question that, the blood type theory, personally. So,
okay.
You know, I think everyone is unique, biophysically unique, and that we each, for me, I strongly believe there's a plant-based solution to every health challenge we face. And it's just a matter of really trial and error and experimentation to see what our unique biophysical composition requires. I think, you know, there's so many contradictory theories out there, and they totally say the opposite things. And so for me, you could really argue till the end of time about which diet is healthier or not. But when you take into account, for me, as long as you can demonstrate that a plant-based diet is as healthy as the other diets out there, which clearly to me it is, then you need to take, because we're not living in a vacuum, we have to take into account what's the impact of our food choices on the environment, on future generations, on our, you know, how many resources we have on the planet. And also, personally, I feel, to look at what kind of energy are we bringing into the world by our food choices. So if we could choose a path that brings in more compassion and gentleness and kindness into the world, that to me is what the world needs most. So that's kind of my perspective on it.
Right. And also, too, I think it's somewhere early in the book, it talks about if you're making any kind of significant dietary changes, to consult a doctor, and nutritionist, someone rather than that might know your own particular medical history or other things about some certain kinds of food that might affect you in one way or another.
Yeah.
So
it's a deep topic, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of levels to it.
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, there there are all kinds of resources, too, in the back of the book. So websites, books, films, other things to, you know, again, educate yourself further or find out maybe a path that might be particularly good for you. So, and also in the back, I noticed one of the credits that I was struck by was Recipe Taster. Now, how do I not have that gig? I mean, you're in South Florida. I'm in South Florida. Geez, I feel like I'm qualified to taste stuff, but...
So. Well, when I assemble my team for the next book, I'll let you know.
Okay, I should hope so. Okay, Mark, well, we have just reached about the end of our time. We'll speak with Mark Reinfeld. His new book is Healing the Vegan Way, Plant-Based Eating for Optimal Health and Wellness, available wherever you get your books. There's also a website for his books and project. One of the many things we didn't get into is there's a Skype consulting and all kinds of other things that go on. So it's veganfusion.com to find out more about Mark and his projects and other things that he's involved with, as well as the books themselves. So, Mark, thank you so much for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Thanks again, Duncan. Great to talk with you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In a few moments, I'll speak with Claire Ray of Friends of Strays about the biggest fundraising event of the year they're holding just around the corner. In fact, and an ongoing event that provides pet food to people maybe low income or otherwise struggling at the moment to keep their animals fed, and they want to encourage that, of course. So right now, though, it's time to step into the comedy corner. We're going to hear a classic piece from Steve Martin, who, as a reminder, will be performing the Martin Short at Ruth Eckert Hall on February 11th for a $200 pledge. You could help me and Talking Animals and WNF out with a pledge right now today. So let's hear a little Steve Martin vintage piece. This is Steve Martin with Cat Handcuffs on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
How many people have cats? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, 10. Now, let me ask you this. Do you trust them? Because I've got to get a pair of cat handcuffs, and I got to get them right away. Just the little ones that go around the little front paws. Or maybe the manacles of four that get all four paws. But what a drag. I found out my cat was embezzling from me. You think you know a cat for 10 years? He pulls something like this. Found out while I was away, he would go out to the mailbox, pick up the checks, take them down to the bank and cash them. Disguised as me. He had the little kitty arrow through the head. And the little kitty bunny ears. And I wouldn't have caught him, but I went outside to his house where he sleeps. And there was about $3,000 worth of cat toys out there. And you can't return them because they have spit all over them. So now I'm stuck with $3,000 worth of cat toys. Oh, sure, they're fun. Got the little rubber mouse, has a bell inside of it. Boy, I hate it when it goes under the sofa. Whoa, give me that, give me that, give me that.
That was Steve Martin with a piece called Cat Handcuffs, taken from his album Wild and Crazy Guy. You can see him in action on stage with Martin Short, no less, and the Steep Canyon Rangers at Ruth Eckert Hall on February 11th for a pledge of $200. Now, let's move on to a brief conversation with Claire Ray of Friends of Strays about some key events the organization has coming up soon. So let's welcome Claire Ray back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Thanks for having me.
Let's briefly outline what exactly Friends of Strays is and their considerable history.
Yes, we've been around since the 70s. We're a nonprofit animal shelter. We take in strays and get them spayed, neutered, vaccinated, and all that good stuff, and then find them their forever home.
Well, that sounds like a pretty reasonable mission. That sounds great and noble. So let's talk about, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into that and function that way, so those things need to be paid for in one way or another, and so there's events, obviously, that Friends of Strays does to help resupply the coffers, et cetera, and keep all those things going. So let's talk about the big annual fundraising event, and give us a few details about that.
Yes, this is going to be our first soiree. It's a 20s theme, a night in the Roaring 20s. It's going to be October 1st at the Mirror Lake Lyceum in St. Petersburg. And it's going to be a lot of fun. There's live music, there's a DJ, auctions, 50-50 raffles, great food, and just a really great event. So we're hoping to get lots of people out so that we can raise funds to take care of all these animals.
That sounds great. And so would you expect a lot of people to be wearing their Roaring Twenties garb, their flappers outfits, and other things?
We are highly encouraging that, but anybody who doesn't want to participate in that doesn't have to. Cocktail attire is fine, but we really do want to see everybody dressed up as much as possible in the flapper outfit.
Sure. The more flapping, the better, I think,
exactly,
is the motto. Yeah. And I think there's a dedicated page on your...
There is. You can get the tickets at friendsofstrays.com/soiree.
I mean, there's a lot of things that Friends of Strays does, but that's, we want to be sure to highlight that because that keeps, helps the event like that, helps pay
exactly
for the other ones. But let's talk a little bit about the pet pantry program, because I just think that is a pet food pantry. I just think that's so important in so many ways. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what it is, and then we'll get into how it works.
Another thing that's really important to us is keeping pets that have homes in their homes so they don't end up in shelters. So what we do, we get donations from local stores, Walmarts, Targets, whatever, their scratch and dents, and we have volunteers who go pick them up and bring them back to the shelter, and then what we can't use goes into a food pantry, and at the end of every month, the last Saturday of the month, between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., we hold our pet food pantry, and people who've hit hard times, can't afford to feed their pets, we give them the food that we have.
I just think that's fantastic, because I think I maybe touched on this earlier in the show, but one premise to that, obviously, is that people who are struggling at that moment a little bit, maybe to keep all the bills paid, where they think, oh, God, can we really keep the dog and cat or whatever fed on an ongoing basis? And pretty soon, people start to think, do we just have to take them to the shelter, or we just can't keep doing this? And this obviously makes that, hopefully at least, unnecessary in cases where otherwise people might be seriously considering surrendering their pets.
Exactly. That's our hope. And then any food that we have left over, we do donate to other organizations that also have food pantries to help out.
That's so great. So if people wanted to help out with that, either by donations of actual pet food or throw a few bucks in the direction of helping support specifically the pet food pantry program, how would they go about doing that, Claire?
Through our website, friendsofstrays.com, there is a link to be able to volunteer or donate, and whatever, however you want to help out.
That's great. Well, this sounds really, really cool, and we'll wish a grand old time at the soiree, and also hope that people do step up and further help, because I assume the more food and or funds that came in for food, the more families that would be able to be served. And I assume there's probably just a basic method that families qualify for.
Yes, we do prefer that there are pets be spayed and neutered, and that's one thing that we will give them information about, low-cost spay and neuter if they need that. And if they're on any type of government assistance, it helps us to know that to help us get grants to continue funding these things.
I see. Great. But again, all that can be sorted out by going to Friends of Strays.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, Claire, thanks for filling us in on both those important things and all your good work and all your colleagues' good work. And again, we hope everybody has a grand time at the bash.
Thank you, Duncan. Thanks for helping us spread the word.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity. Rolling into the noon hour, it constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt. Right now, we're getting into a few little animal news and announcements, and it does seem like we do have a pledge for the Steve Martin and Martin Short tickets, and hopefully we'll be able to announce that before we wrap up the show today. But either way, thank you to that pledger. That really helps us a lot and helps the station get off to a good start for our fund drive, which, again, otherwise officially starts October 1st. As for some animal news and announcements, one thing I was struck by is a piece, I think it officially ran yesterday, maybe it went online today, I'm not sure, but by Kathleen Parker, the conservative columnist for the Washington Post and a Pulitzer Prize winner at one point, if I'm not mistaken. And she has a piece headlined, "Another Group That Loses If Trump Wins." animals, and really goes on to sort of make a case for how the animal kingdom will have lost one of its staunchest defenders when the Oval Office is abandoned by Barack Obama, which of course is true. Done a lot of things administratively and otherwise to add further protections for animals, but then says just the complete reversal that will take place in that regard if Donald Trump were to be elected. So again, easy to find online. Kathleen Parker, again, as a conservative columnist, I found that particularly interesting and notable. Our friends at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay have received a sizable grant to sterilize, spay and neuter outdoor cats. So if you want to find out more about that, or if you deal with feral cat colonies and want to get some help in that regard, go to humanesocietytampa.org and find out more about what they can do to help you with that great new grant. So congratulations to them on that. And we'll hold the others for next week. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're all listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663. And correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals, and in this case, two totally different answers could both be correct today. That doesn't happen too often on Talking Animals. Let's see what we got. Can you name this animal tune? Can you name that animal tune? It could go under two animal names, really, that song. Do we have info on our cool pledge? Right under the wire. Awesome. Yes. Thank you. Oh, we have. Okay, so it's an anonymous pledge, but it is someone who has taken the Steve Martin and Martin Short tickets and loves everything on the show and always something makes her cry, informs about all different kinds of animals. Okay, good questions, well prepared. Wow, all right. Well, we got the pledge and some nice comments about Talking Animals. I can't beat that. So thank you very much, Anonymous. We greatly appreciate it. So this is Talking Animals on WMNF. Tampa, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. We do have a full phone bank with people guessing the Name That Animal Tune selection, and we will... Well, actually, you know what? Let's gild the lily a little bit. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. You're actually on the air. Can you name that animal tune?
Flight of the Bumblebee, or the theme from the Green Hornet.
Wow, you got them both. All right. What is your name, sir?
This is Jeff in Plant City.
Okay, Jeff, you are our winner. I'm going to put you on hold and come back and get your information. Thanks for playing.
Sweet.
This is Talking Animals. Rob Laura is up next with Radioactivity. Thanks.